So in our business, the very first thing that EOS forced us to do was come up with an actual structure for the business. In EOS terms, anyone running will know it as the accountability chart. Just the process of putting that down, who's in what seat, and then fleshing it out underneath it, that in conjunction with really figuring out what's your core focus and who are you going after, those two things were the baseline to give clarity to everything.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. This is Brian Kaskavalsian, and with me today is Bill Burkhart from Kangaroof. What's up, Bill?
Not too much. It's just a beautiful sunny day here in Michigan. So we have no hurricanes, so life is good up here.
Life is good. That's right. So if the weather's good, that means you're installing roofs and making money.
Absolutely. Any day the sun is shining and it's not raining.
Let's start with the 2 minute or 3 minute version of your story, and then we'll get into some specific topics here.
Sure. So obviously, I'm one of the owners here. We're a family owned and operated business here in the suburbs of Metro Detroit. But the simple answer is my dad founded the company 18 years ago because he got sick and tired of, unfortunately, roofing. We don't have the greatest reputation as an industry.
No, you don't say.
I know. You see this.
I've never heard that before.
If you want to have a nightmare, look on the BBB and see all the complaints about roofers as a category.
Yeah.
And he just had a simple belief. You know what? If you do things the right way and you treat people the right way and you take care of your team, my God, you got to be able to figure out how to make money and make a worthwhile business. And that's what they did. My brother came on board shortly after. I mean, they're both awesome, awesome technicians. And as they started to grow and scale the business, what neither one of them could do was the sales and the marketing side. That's just not their niche. And I'd been consulting with them for about 2.5 years and kind of had the light bulb. I'm like, wait a minute, they're going to need to hire somebody who has my same skill set. I got a great relationship with my family. I'm like, what do you guys think about? And the fisherman's tale is my brother jumped across the table at that point to go, oh my God, yeah, hire him, bring Junior on. Because my dad wouldn't let him approach me about that for about 2.5 years because my previous career was had a lot of success in that.
Can I ask what the previous career was?
Yeah. So before I came back, obviously working for a roofer, I did roofing all through junior high, elementary school. We'll protect my father. We won't say what age I started getting on roofs because I don't think OSHA would approve of it. But, I started in private college prep school administration, and which is just code for I ran all the marketing and the recruitment and the admissions and financial aid and built up the enrollment and the marketing there, and was an awesome, awesome experience. Unfortunately, there was a leadership change. We didn't see ethically eye to eye, and that's what caused me to even start looking out. And, as they say, you never see the straight line looking in front of you, but if you look backwards, it's pretty miraculous. And yeah, that's what led me back here, because I grew up hating roofing, saying, I never want to see another shingle ever again. I you grow up doing it, you don't necessarily love it, but coming into it and consulting, I realized, wow, it's not roofing. It's the people business. And you're just helping them through this, through this avenue, which happens to be exterior remodeling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to look at it. Yeah. It's a solution. You're providing a solution.
That's all it is. Just like a chiropractor or a doctor or the dentist or mechanic, our avenue of doing that is just through roofing. And unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, because roofing has such a bad reputation, if you just do things the right way, yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's messy. Yeah, it's dangerous. But you're really helping people. You're solving problems. And I can lay my head down at night on my pillow and feel really good about that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, good. Now, I thought, is Kangaroof a franchise?
That is the question we get from all sorts of people. And just like Brian, like with the Wealthy Contractor groups, we joined a group called Certain Path about 11 years ago. which is just professional development for like-minded contractors. And when we joined, you could license just the DBA Kangaroo Roof for $1 a year. And we jumped on it just because it was great brand recognition.
So yeah.
The original name was Four Seasons Roofing and Sheet Metal. Great. It sounds like everybody else. And it's been awesome. So there are about 15 to 20 others throughout the country. Every one of us are completely different. So we're Four Seasons Kangaroo Roof. Good friends of mine down in Philadelphia area, they're A. Brooks Kangaroo Roof. Every one of them are completely independent. There's no franchise.
Oh, okay. Good, good, good. Yeah, that makes it.
It's just a marketing DBA.
Better. Yeah. Cool. So you work with your father and your brother.
Yeah.
Okay. And you are sales and marketing?
Yeah. So I run the front end, which is the sales and marketing, call center, you know, anything like this, you know, talking out in the community. That's my... Unfortunately, there's now animated versions of me. I've become the spokesperson for us.
Nice.
But I handle all that front end. They're great on the back end, on the technical side with the crews and the teams, quality control. And what's kind of great is we're all so different. We get along. Like, my brother's such a great technical roofer. Like, I don't worry about once we sign it and sell it, because my God, him and his team can solve any problem. And on the front end, he never has to worry about what's coming in the door, because he knows I have it, and we hit our numbers, and we run it by the numbers.
That's great. That's fantastic. You don't hear that a lot. I mean, it's with family businesses, you oftentimes hear about the struggles and the arguments and the disagreements and, you know, totally different direction of where you want to take the business. So that's really cool to hear. Now, I know you guys are running EOS. You're an EOS company. Talk to me a little bit about that, because I you know, to me, it changed our world when it was first brought into our company. But how long have you guys been doing EOS, and what are some of the things that have changed?
So we've been doing it for about 6 years now.
Wow.
We always say we read the book Traction, tried to self-implement for about a year and a half. And then we did the really smart thing and go, okay, there's got to be somebody who knows more than us, and went out and actually hired an implementer. Right. The two decisions of one, moving to EOS, two, hiring the implementer, are two of the most dramatically impactful things we've ever done as an organization, because it brought such clarity to how are we, you know, every business has a laundry list of issues that we need to tackle. Right. It brought great clarity to who we are, how are we going to do everything, our processes and our systems, and then a system to identifying what are the goals and initiatives. And then what are the issues and how are we going to tackle those? And it just gave us a systematic way to do it. I've come to the realization, I don't have to invent the wheel. There's enough books and systems. Like, just go out there and find what works. And if the data says it's going to work, trust it, implement it, refine, and keep moving forward. It was a complete game changer. You know, since we've moved to it, everyone talks about their top line, and our top line has gone up every single year. What I'm more proud of is the bottom line, the net profit every single year since we've moved to that has gone up every single year consistently.
That's awesome.
We're not to where we want to be, but we're on the path. We know the road to get there, because we didn't want to just rip a Band-Aid and blow everything up. So it's been incremental improvement every year. And EOS has given us the pathway to do that.
Yeah, it's a pretty remarkable system.
Mm-hmm.
It's an operating system for your business. And I say it all the time, God, I wish I had known about something like this 20 years ago when I was in business, because it makes such a big difference. Let's walk through, just to give a lot of people listening to this probably already doing EOS, but for those that aren't, bear with us for just a minute. Give us, you know, just kind of the high level, quick overview of what does EOS look like in your business?
So in our business, the very first thing that EOS forced us to do was come up with an actual structure for the business. You know, in EOS terms, anyone running will know it as the accountability chart. But just the process of putting that down, who's in what seat, and then fleshing it out underneath it, was that in conjunction with really figuring out what's your core focus and who are you going after, those two things were the baseline to give clarity to everything, because then you can start to organize your problems, you can organize your initiatives, And for, I think for the team, like in so many of our small businesses, we wear so many hats, right? And I don't care if you're doing 2 million a year, 20 million a year, we all inevitably do it. But it gave just a language, even like, I'll use my dad. My father is our estimator. So there'd be times where I have to go, okay, I'm coming to you as talking to my estimator who reports to me. I'm not coming to you as the integrator, right? Because I report to the integrator. And it gave just a way to discuss things because he could then switch gears and go, you're not asking me for advice strategically. You're talking to me tactically as the estimator. I messed something up or I need to refine this, change this number because our labor cost on this type of system is a little higher. You could take it all the way down to the call center and just knowing how to elevate an issue to the appropriate people. The clarity is such a huge component of it, and it makes your team feel that much more engaged because they actually understand what they're doing.
Yeah. And that key is that accountability.
Oh, yeah.
Is like, it was life-changing for me because I did not do a good job of holding people accountable before.
You're preaching to the choir.
In myself, it was, I had the drive, I had the ambition, I wanted to get stuff done, and I would hold myself accountable. But what about the team? And then the beauty of the accountability chart, which for those of you that aren't familiar, think of it as an org chart, but on steroids.
Oh, yeah.
Because now it's not only about who's what title and what position, it's who's responsible for sales, who is accountable for putting X number of sales on the board every single week.
Yep. Well, and then you take it even once you go there, because then you can start to drill down. What are all those key numbers that drive it?
That's
you
right.
Know, yep. We implemented something on my side. We call it the offensive team. Bunch of broken down old jocks here. We call it the offensive team, the defensive team, special teams. But we moved to, with all the salesmen in the call center, every Monday now we have what we call the accountability meeting. Everyone on this, and on the sales side of it, it's such a numbers-driven entity.
Yeah.
Where my guys know, hey, they're responsible. They better hit 10 first visits in a week. They better have a closing percentage of 40% and their dollars sold every single week. And if they don't hit it, it means as the manager, I'm clear. I'm not sitting down to go, hey, what's going on? It's, hey, this is where you are off. What's our plan this week now to get back on track? Because somebody who struggled with accountability, I would have wonderful, meaningful conversations with my team, and then I'd get the same results. Now it's giving me the information to talk very, very specifically and give them specifics about here's where you're not meeting the standard. What do we need to do to give you tools to meet that standard?
And what's great about it too is it's about collaboration.
Oh, yeah.
It's not about beating somebody up. It's not about telling them you suck, you're a loser, you better go fix this. It's what do we have to do to improve the performance so that we hit our numbers?
We talk about it all the time. We call your KPIs, this is what it means to win, right? I always want to talk about, hey, I want you guys to win. This is what winning looks like.
Yeah.
So if you miss your mark, it's not shame on you. It's, hey, let's sit down for a second, collaborate. What was there something this past week that happened? Oh, my kid was sick. And you know what? I just wasn't as focused because, you know, we had the sitter. Well, let's talk about that. Okay. Do we need to ease up a little bit? And then we're going to make up for it over the next 2 weeks. Like, you can have a really collaborative, positive discussion. So your team's not beating themselves, feeling like they suck. They understand where they missed it, but we got two more quarters to go, right? Hey, let's get back on track. And here's the plan to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. And I love that it's, you know, I talk to people all the time about if you can't, for some reason, if you're a smaller company or you can't afford to bring on an implementer, there's a way to do this. There's a way to implement some of the controls, if you will, into your business. And it's defining, like, what does this quarter look like? Break it down. We have 13 weeks. Break it down into weekly numbers, whatever your KPIs are. Installed revenue, sales, number of leads issued, whatever those, you know, whatever the scorecard items are. And then have a meeting every week, sit down, go through that scorecard, go through those numbers, and then come up with, are we on track? Are we off track? And if we're off track, what are the issues? Because we want to know now, We don't want to know at the end of the quarter, at the end of the month, at the end of the year. We want to know today so that we can fix it and get back on track. And that is a what I call EOS light. You could do EOS light until you're ready to go to an implementer. Out of curiosity, what did the business look like when you guys brought on an implementer?
So at that time, we were probably doing about $5.5 to $6.5 million a year in installed revenue. You know, I'm not going to hide anything. You know, the net profit was somewhere around 4%, 4.5%. And it's which
typical.
Yeah.
Typical. Yeah.
And you got to put 3% back in at a minimum just to reinvest if you're trying to grow your company at all. And almost instantly, from the time we hired that implementer, I think we saw a 2% net profit jump by the end of that year. And I'm going to cut to even this year. We had a killer first quarter. Second quarter, I don't say things went off the rails, but whether we lost focus, the economy, there's a lot of factors in it. Here's what was great. Our CFO went through and he had to put a plan together to gain 2% net profit back by the end of the year, gave him clarity. We found like six or seven things. Then it was like, awesome, you found this. My biggest frustration was, well, son of a gun, why did we not do these 2 years ago? Why didn't, which,
right.
You know, that kind of lends itself to, as you said, the issues. And is it a short term or a long term? And a lot of these things were things he had in his head and on the long term issue board. Well, guess what? They suddenly became a short term issue and we're able to reap the rewards that get back on track so we can finish up and have a great year.
And it's interesting. You know, we've only been talking about 15 minutes, but boy, you've hit like five or six main principles of that we talk about here at The Wealthy Contractor. Oh, yeah. And one of them that you just mentioned is that focus on profitability. You said it earlier, but you just said it again now. And I love that, having that focus on profitability. Top line's great, but if you're only making 4%, why do so much work? $5-6 million? That's a lot of work. That's a lot of risk. That's a lot of liability, a lot of moving parts to only make 4% on that.
Well, we try and explain it. We do something with our team about once a year. We call it the penny game. And it's, hey, of every dollar that comes in, we let them all do it. Okay, how many, if you were running the company, how many pennies would you put to marketing? How many would you put to commissions? How many to, you know, general admin or project managers? And it's amazing. Almost every single time, we have about three more categories left and they're out of pennies.
They're out of pennies.
And then we try and explain, no, we want you to think. So we're trying to hit, you know, a 10 to 12% net. We all hear it, you know, oh, that, you know, contractors are greedy. It's like, you do know a brand new Jimmy John's is striving to hit an 18% net profit at the end of the year. And they're just flipping sandwiches with guys and gals in college. It's like, we're taking all this liability. We're helping people, we're serving, and then we got to stand behind it for 20 years, 30 years, whatever it might be. We deserve to make a decent net profit at the end of the year.
I love that penny game, because what a lot of people will do is they'll say, okay, tell me how much profit you think there is in the business. And they'll put all the pennies, like almost all the pennies would go to profit. But I like the way you do it is you say, okay, let's break it down and say, okay, how much goes here and how much would you put there and how much? And what a great exercise that is.
And they're always shocked by when we get to Uncle Sam. That's the one that really blows their mind.
Yeah. Oh, Uncle Sam.
He always manages to make sure he gets his net profit.
Oh, he's got to get his, what do they call that? Something with blood. It's really bad. Like, anyway, he's got to get his cut. He's our partner. You know,
he is. And, you know, I always bemoan, I said, you know, there's only one good thing if you pay a lot in taxes, and that just means you made a lot of money.
Yeah. Well, I used to be of the mind that, well, you know, rich people don't pay taxes. And I took pride in the fact that, oh, I'm not paying taxes, but, you know, my people are paying taxes. And that's because I wasn't making any money.
Correct.
When you start making money, you realize all of the taxes are paid by a very tiny percentage of the overall population. 10%, by the way, 10% of the population pays almost, it's over 75% of total taxes. And oh, by the way, when you go sell your company, when that money drops into your account, you have to pay your partner. And your partner is going to take about a quarter of your work. 20 to 20, depending on also where you are in the country. So yeah, people forget about that.
Well, you know what? Even going back to US, though, that's one of the things, you know, just by getting that organized, it freed our CFO so much where we can, you know, we have cash flow statements and we can actually start to look at what's coming in, what's going out, what do we anticipate? God forbid you ever want to take a distribution.
Yeah.
You know, it gave us clarity to know, you know, and I'll speak to ourselves like, man, as a contractor, can we take money out right now? Can we not? And between that, there's a great book. I'm sure you've read it, Profit First. And, you know, all those little pieces just come together. And that's really what's allowed us to have that success.
Well, our new company, The Profit Masters, is really all about designing profit into the business from the beginning. Day one, whatever day one is. I mean, you could be in business for 12 years. And day one is the day that you decide enough is enough. We're going to be profitable. We're going to put together a profit blueprint. And that's going to be our blueprint for success. And then we're going to put in the right accounting formulas. And then we're going to get with, in our case, we our clients meet with a CFO every month. You guys have a CFO, which is awesome. And now we're going through that P&L and we're saying, okay, we missed 2 points here. How are we going to get that 2 points back? Here are some ways, here's some troubleshooting to do. And the focus stays on profitability.
Well, it's what we would tell all of our employees, right? You know, if you want to retire one day, pay yourself first. As a contractor, it's so easy for us to forget to, you know, hey, this supplier had, you know, I owe this supplier this much and we're waiting on that insurance check from this homeowner or business owner. Like, it's so easy to get yourself lost if you don't keep that as... We're all in business to make a profit. We are a for-profit business. There's nothing wrong with saying that and earning a profit. Now, you know, you don't get carried away necessarily, but if you're taking care of people, you're not ripping them off, you deserve to get a good return on your hard work and your investment you made as a business owner.
This episode is brought to you by Business Success Consulting Group. Does the way your business currently operate prevent you from scaling and growing? Is the most valuable knowledge in your organization held by just a handful of key personnel? Are you spending valuable time training your teams instead of running your business? Business Success Consulting Group understands the challenges of organizing while you grow, and they specialize in putting order into the chaos of an expanding organization. Adi and her team at BSCG work closely with you and your team to capture vital business knowledge, and then they help you develop, document, optimize, and implement systems and processes across every area of your organization, from sales and operations to marketing, human resources, and business development. Adi and her team have decades of experience and will help you empower your teams to function effectively with reproducible results that will set your business up for continual success and expansion. Schedule your free consultation today by calling or texting 503-662-2911.
So I hope everybody listening that's at, I'd say, 10% or less net profit at the end of the year just heard everything he just said. And if you need to hear it again, you're not getting it from me, you're getting it from him. Go back a minute or two and listen to what he just said, because he is absolutely right. It's interesting, I didn't put two and two together, but I saw an article recently about Jimmy John's. Mm-hmm. Like, they were comparing different, I forgot what it was, but different businesses or different franchises or something. It was an interesting article, but I didn't pick up on the 18% bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. I just read that somewhere. Who knows? Maybe it was in that same article, but yeah, but you could look at any of them, McDonald's, Starbucks, they're all shooting for 15 to 20%. And it's like, my gosh. Exactly. And, you know, I think people just sometimes see the big numbers and just assume the money's got to be there, but it's all percentage based. And if you don't manage it, it won't be there. And I feel for a lot of folks, like, I look at my father. Since COVID, he literally, outside of the commercial estimating side, we had to remove him from any of the pricing on the residential side, on the service side, because in his mind, being in it for 40 years, the numbers, you know, I always like to say the math wasn't mathing, but it was just an emotional thing.
Yeah.
How could I possibly charge this person this amount? It shouldn't cost that. Our labor shouldn't be that. I'm like a little emotionally separate where I go, I agree, but if we want to turn a profit, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
And you know what? For us, and I don't hide anything from anyone, you know, like our repair closing rate has to be 70% or better. Our replacements have to be 40. And guess what? People are happy to pay it because we're delivering enough value that people feel good about that. And we stand behind it and take care of them. I think that's the key. If as a contractor, you're doing the right thing and you're really serving and helping people, there's a market that wants to pay for that service. You know, it might be harder to find them, but there is a market that wants to pay for that.
Yeah, absolutely. They want peace of mind. They want confidence in their contractor and in the work that they do.
Yeah.
And you have to charge the right amount of money. The other thing too is if you are actually doing a disservice to your customer if you are not charging enough, because, well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of the big reasons is you won't have all of the resources available to deliver on the peace of mind, the confidence. You won't be able to hire the best people.
Oh, 100%. We train our team on the concept, because I'm sure you've heard it. Every person listening has heard from one of their salesmen, how can they afford to charge this when we're charging X? And what we try and explain to them, and it's why the penny game is so important. It's like, hey, you like that new vehicle you're driving that's wrapped and looks great, right? And you like the bonus at the end of the year, right? Well, they're operating on a markup. They don't know what their margin is. And they're actually slowly just, we say, eating their trucks, but slowly going out of business, and they don't know any better.
Yeah, and it's tough to see because I see it a lot. And you're right. It's a very emotional conversation. And it shouldn't be. It should be data driven. It should be logic. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you're about taking care of your customer. And if your customer is taken care of and they feel good about it, you've done your job, even if they paid more. Because it's not about the money.
No, it's about are you delivering more value than what you're charging? That's what we always try and explain to the sales team. People will buy what they're receiving more value than the perceived value. If it's greater than what they're paying in hard dollars, they'll buy it every time. Every time.
So on that customer, you know, a part of the customer journey and your focus on the customer, you mentioned you guys do repairs. Repairs are a big part of your business. I run into a lot of roofers. I tell them all, if you're not doing repairs, you're out of your mind. Why do you do repairs?
Some of it goes back to EOS when we did that. We got really focused. Our mission is proving there's a better way to serve our team, clients, and community through the roofing industry. Well, if you don't do service work, how can you possibly be serving them? And in our market, what we realized was there really was the only people who were doing service. We're doing it to lie and walk into the house and just tell them they needed a new roof.
That's right.
And at the end of the day, you know, if we can walk into a roof that's 12 years old and you got a leak in a leaky skylight and two blown out pipe boots, and I can repair those and take care of them. And then we have a maintenance program for residential and commercial and beyond that roof. And if I can get you to 25 years, hey, I've seen you every single year. You've probably bought gutter protection from me or blown an insulation or siding at some point. And guess what? Because we've taken such good care of you, odds are you're not even calling another roofer. You're just going to call us when it's time to replace your roof. And we don't change, you know, one of our core beliefs is we have straightforward pricing. I don't care what city you're in, how far away, high rent district, you know, in the poverty areas. Our price is our price. It's the exact same. Whether we've serviced you 1 year, 10 years, and that just gives people peace of mind to know, hey, it's already prefigured, whatever. Sure, it's always more than you want to spend. But I know I'm paying the same thing my neighbor's going to spend. And that commitment to let's repair it, let's maintain it, let's get you that extra 5-10 years. And when the roof replacement comes, yeah, nobody wants to do it, but you're going to have a relationship with us and trust that's going to allow you to choose us and allow us to continue to serve you.
Super smart. Super smart. I think that you have to take the long view. And the long view is also going to help you in the short term. Because those repairs that you've now geared yourself up for, brought on good people, good service teams, those repairs are at crazy good margins.
They're very good margins.
Very good margins. And the thing is you can charge somebody thousands of dollars for a repair, and it's worth every penny.
Oh, absolutely.
Because now they didn't have to spend 20 grand to redo the roof. They spent three or four to do a repair or two or whatever it is. And then, like you said, they're going to buy other stuff from you because you're going to keep in touch with them. You mentioned a maintenance program. What's the maintenance program, if you don't mind sharing that?
No, not at all. On the residential side, we just call it the King of Care Club. Once a year, we're coming out. We're blowing off your roof. We're cleaning off your skylights. If you got gutter protection, we're blowing those off. The guys are going to be, our technicians will be up there. They bring a tube of caulk. They always have emergency temporary repair supplies too. But, you know, hey, the chimney flash just needs a little extra sealant. You know, any of those kind of perfunctory little things that if it takes you 5 or 10 minutes, the guys know, just do it. And then the last piece is we always get in the attic. Just double check in there. Hey, is there suddenly some mold? Did something change? You got birds or critters in there. And it's just about being proactive and trying to just identify any little thing, catch it, nip it in the bud before it turns into the $3,000, $4,000 reflashing of a whole chimney or skylights. And the folks who are in it absolutely love it because they know exactly what's going on the roofs. Sure, maybe they bought a $400 repair. God bless them. We're happy to do it, but they also have peace of mind going into, you know, we're in the suburbs of Detroit. We get nasty winters. They're not worried when the snow comes. They're not worried when the 2 inches of rain in an hour comes because they know every year, my roof is good. When it is time, I'll know because King is letting me know that it's time to do the roof and I can plan for it and do it then.
Now, you charge for this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we call it Netflix for your roof, although Netflix charges more than we do.
Oh, really? How much do you charge?
$10 a month.
That's it?
That's it. $10 a month. And we have, I think we have about 500 people in the program right now.
Nice.
But I just came back from a conference and I was freaking out. You know, this is a weird economy. It's not a recession and it's not great. It's weird.
Weird.
I went to this conference and everyone was freaking out about leads. I was freaking out, but not because I didn't have enough. My issue is I'm just going, man, I have too many repair leads. What's going on? And I realized, I'm like, whoa, you got a blessing here.
Yeah.
You
know,
don't be complaining about that. We're just like, hey, if our replacement numbers are a little off, great. Because if we're still servicing all these people, we're going to get them into the programs. We're going to see them in a year, 2 years, 3 years when that roof replacement comes. Plus, still probably about a quarter of them that you go out to and they really aren't repairable, that they do turn into roof replacements. And if we do a great thorough evaluation and we just show them exactly why you cannot repair that roof, it's like a crazy number. It's probably 60% of the time they go, okay, what's the new roof cost? Okay, let's just do it.
Now, do you offer that to new roof replacement people as well?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. I won't lie to anyone. Like, we still are struggling to really figure out the niche on how to get them to bite because we offer some really comprehensive guarantees.
Yeah, yeah.
So they sit there and go, well, if I have a 20-year complete blanket guarantee on my roof, why am I worried about this? We do try and educate them. You know, I don't care if it's CertainTeed, GAF, Owens Corning. You put on one of those belt and suspenders warranties, the fine print every one of them says you must regularly maintain your roof. So we do try and educate them to that. But you know what? We still sell them probably about 10% of the roof replacements we do. Commercially, we sell them a ton, more on the commercial. But the repair, we probably sell maintenance programs, I'd say about half of the repairs we go out on.
Yeah, sounds about right. Now, here's what's very interesting about that. So you use G4 marketing for your relationship marketing side, right? Do all the repair people get the full program?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Everyone commercially, residentially, repairs, replacements, everyone goes into the referral program.
Okay. So they get the thank you.
Yep.
They get the review requests.
Yep.
They get the referral rewards program.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get all of the ongoing touches.
I'll tell you this. Oh, go ahead.
Now, here's what's genius about the $10 a month. It probably costs you less than, well, I'd say probably on an ongoing basis, $10 a year to stay in communication with these people. Call it 20. Let's call it $20 a year.
Sure.
Your people are paying for that.
Oh, 100%.
That's free for you because the maintenance program at measly 10 bucks a month is now covering your costs to market to and take care of your customer.
Oh, 100%.
Genius.
And then you factor, I can't say how many, like, I get all sorts because I am the face for the company. So everything comes from me. How many texts, and I don't even know how they find my cell phone. It's probably from years ago when I used to personally review to every Google review and leave it up there. But I get texts and I get emails from homeowners and business owners all the time. I have a buddy of mine who owns a chain of pizza stores here in Metro Detroit. We repaired his home and we do his commercial work too. He literally sent me an email when he got the newsletter. He goes, "This is brilliant. How do you find the time to do this?" I just said, "Charlie, thank you. Love you."
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm squeezing 27 hours into a 24-hour day, but
that's right.
I preach G4 to everyone because before we got in, our number one lead source has historically always been referrals and existing clients. It has only increased since we've joined. And I love your term you always talk about is build that moat, right?
Yeah.
And especially part of our recession plan is that between the service and our existing clients, those two components were like, hey, I'm not saying if we get a full-blown recession, we're not going to hurt and struggle a little bit, but we're going to be all right. We're going to be fine. We're going to get through it.
Yeah.
And then when it turns, we're going to be in that much better of a position to really take advantage of the market at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah. That alone keeps you pretty recession resistant, of course, with a good reputation and all of that. But those plays will keep your business recession resistant.
Oh, yeah.
No matter how bad and how ugly it gets. And depending on how things go, you know, in the next month or two, we'll know. We'll have a good sense of how it might go next.
Like November 8th already. I'm ready.
I know, really. I want this over with. It's been going on for way too long.
Way too long and started way too soon. No, it's I try and just preach to everyone. I mean, you look at the HVAC industry really started the trend with the maintenance programs. And for people in our industries who are looking to sell, right? There's a ton of private equity out there, venture capitalists trying to purchase. One of the things we looked at, and we're not, I'm in this because I love this industry. I'm not interested in selling out. But one of the big ways you build your value in the company, if I'm a roofer who does $10 million a year and I have a 10% net profit, maybe valued X. If I'm a roofer doing $10 million a year and I have a 10% net profit and I have 2,000 people in my reoccurring maintenance program, my value just went through the roof.
Yeah, that's right. Your multiple went up.
Yep.
All right. So as we wrap up here, I have a new question I want to start asking people. And you don't have to answer it, but I'm curious about after work. What do you do after work?
What do I do after work? I generally, during the week, I am a self-proclaimed workaholic. I don't believe in work-life balance. I think that's made up. Everyone's got their own balance. You got to figure it out. So I leave here generally about 7. I go home, cook dinner for me and my spouse, watch a little bit of TV, and I'm in bed by 9. But I also get up at 5 a.m. every day. So that's the balance act.
And why 5?
So read the 5 a.m. club years ago. I'm a big fella. I used to be bigger. And I know I have to stay physically active. And I get up, I have my morning coffee, I do a little reflection, I go out, do my exercise for about 45 minutes. And it gives me a little bit of clarity time when I'm jogging out there, I inevitably am thinking about the business. Gives me clarity. So when I get into the office, I'm ready to rock and roll because I am the tone setter for the company. Whether you love him or hate him, Jim Harbaugh, you know, had a great expression, attack each day with enthusiasm unknown to mankind. I really take that personally as the leader here that I got to bring that level of energy and positivity into this place every day. And if I don't start my day that way, I'm not bringing that in here. Now, weekends are a different story. I got the in-ground pool. My backyard is my happy place. So if I'm either in the pool, I got something on the smoker. We always have people over. That's my happy place. I love cooking and entertaining, and that's what I love to do. And of course, you know, I am from Metro Detroit, so, you know, going to a couple Lions games or Tigers games aren't too bad either.
Nice. Awesome. I love that question. I'm going to keep asking it because I'm always curious about what do people do outside of work?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and what does the business, you know, allow them to do or not allow them to do after?
100%.
So thank you for answering my my most curious of questions there.
I wish I was more interesting, but during the week, I'm fairly boring. But on the weekends...
Me too. I am the same way. I'm kind of boring during the week, and I kind of open up on the weekends, and then I'm boring again during the week. But hey.
So far, it works. It's working for you. It works for me.
Yeah. Well, Bill, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you sharing so much with us and being so open. And I wish you nothing but continued success. And to everybody listening, this was another one of those episodes that, I mean, he hit on so many shared principles between us and Kangaroof. And so I would suggest going back and just listening to Bill again, because I think he laid out a lot of really great stuff. And so, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you going to be at Accelerate in February?
I am desperately trying to reorganize my calendar right now because I made a commitment and I have a down payment on that commitment.
So. Oh, geez. Okay.
So
All right, well, that might be a good excuse.
I have been there a couple times. And listen, at the end of the day, anytime you can learn from other like-minded contractors, if you take one nugget, it's worth it. Any event. And what you guys do with your team is I've never been to an event and not come back with at least 2 to 3 things I can implement that have a direct impact positively for my team, the profit, or for our clients. So yeah, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. Well, thank you again. And to everybody listening, until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast.
Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.